This is Orson Welles, speaking from London.
To keep you in suspense.
I had to be everyday grind.
Night transmissions. Our first show, and that's what we do here. We do old radio shows, a couple of hours worth. It comes from CBS Mystery Theater, which was, during the 1970s, an attempt to resurrect vintage radio. As you'll soon find out, it was hosted by E.G. Marshall. It ran between 1974 and 1980. The episode tonight is called Revenge is Not Sweet. This one is from January the 2nd, 1980.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... E.G. Marshall. Today, a special treat. An adaptation from A Concoction in Crime by that master storyteller, Jacques Futrelle, renowned for his creation of the thinking machine. This story begins with a cipher, that method of transforming a text to conceal its meaning. Ciphers have popped up in tales by Edgar Allan Poe, Dorothy Sayers, and Conan Doyle, but I must admit, I rarely come across such a clever concealment of crime as you will give ear to in a moment.
Lying here in the hospital, I've been asking myself, Elizabeth, what is this crazy love I still feel for you?
You can't help yourself, John, can you?
Go away. Get away from me, Elizabeth. I don't want to see you.
Dear John, you mustn't excite yourself.
Nurse!
Shall I tell you something, John? I hate you. I hope you die.
Our drama, Revenge is Not Sweet, adapted from a story by Jacques Futrelle, has been written especially for the Mystery Theater by G. Frederick Lewis, and stars Robert Dryden. As I told you, the trail of today's crime begins with a cipher, that device used in war and peace to conceal state secrets from an enemy. But it could also be used to frustrate your enemy. From there, the trail leads to hatred, and from there to revenge. But, as it said, it's foolish to be avenged on your neighbor by setting his house on fire. In the end, you also may be consumed.
Hatch? Is this Hutchinson Hatch?
Yes, hello. Yeah, that you, Dr. Van Dusen?
Yes. You busy?
I'm always busy. This is a newspaper office, Dr. Van, but go ahead.
No, I don't need this brief. A girl has come to see me, name of Elizabeth Devon. Said her stepfather was Pomeroy Stockton, who died 2 days ago.
The inventor?
That's him.
Yeah, the male did an open heart failure. Wasn't very old, if I remember.
All right, stop talking and listen, Hatch. Miss Devon claims it wasn't heart failure. It was made to look like a suicide, and the doctor wrote a false death certificate. She suspects her stepfather was murdered.
Oh, I like that.
Can we work out the usual deal, Dr. Van? I'm your leg man. Help you on the case, and in return, I get an exclusive to the paper.
I want you to crack your files and go out and ask questions. Stockton had one son. I want to know all about him. All about the girl, too. Then you beat it up here when your shift is over.
I can hardly wait.
On second thought... Wait an hour. She's still here, and I don't want anyone to know you're working on the case. And what do you do, Miss Devon?
I'm studying to be an opera singer. You do know who my stepfather is, was.
Pomeroy Stockton? Great mind. Fine inventor. Never met him, but I respected him. Great loss to science, his death. He had a son, didn't he?
John, yes.
Married?
No.
How old?
31. Why do you ask?
Well, after all, you're not really a blood sister. You're adopted. It occurred to me the son might have been interested in you. No consequence.
Very perceptive of you. John was interested in me, but I wasn't in him.
You disliked him?
Oh, no, not exactly. But over his father's death, I had some reservations.
Well, care to tell me about them?
I was the one who discovered my stepfather dead the morning before last. He was in a room in our house he called his shop. Right away, naturally, I got in touch with John. He lives half an hour away. I showed him a letter I'd found in Mr. Stockton's pocket. John asked me to destroy it.
A letter written by his father?
Oh, yes. His handwriting. I said I'd get rid of the letter, but the more I thought about it, the more worried I became, so I kept it.
Was there an autopsy?
No. John had a college friend, a Dr. Benton, issue a death certificate saying death by heart failure.
Now, you've told me you believed your stepfather was killed and it was made to look like suicide. You're aware the death certificate says natural causes.
If that were so, what was this bottle doing on the floor near him? I have it here in my bag. There. I'd like you to smell that.
Prussic acid. Give me the bottle. I'm sorry you felt it necessary to play detective, Miss Devon. You may have destroyed an important clue.
Have I?
By picking up this small bottle, you've obliterated any fingerprints but your own.
How could I have been so stupid?
Well, I'll keep it if you don't mind. Now, that letter you found...
Oh, I brought that, too. Here you are.
You found this letter in Pomeroy Stockton's pocket?
I did. I'll never forget how he looked, lying there.
Well, I see nothing extraordinary in this. A typical tired of it all, life has no meaning, suicide letter. You were saying why this letter caused you to be suspicious.
I am suspicious. Why should he kill himself? He had everything to live for.
Do you think then, Miss Devon, that this letter was written under coercion? And that somebody may have forced him to take prussic acid?
That's just what I think.
And that a grown man would submit to that?
I don't know. There's some ghastly, horrible mystery in back of all of this. I know it's my stepfather's writing, but I can't believe he'd write it.
Perhaps Pomeroy Stockton never saw this so-called suicide letter. Maybe a forgery.
Is that possible? I could swear the handwriting...
Whatever it is, forged or genuine, it's a strange letter. Tired of it all, I seek the end and am content. Ambition is dead, the grave yawns greedily at my feet, and so on. I mean, really, a little flowery for a man like Stockton.
But how to explain it's his handwriting? I know that. I used to act as his secretary and type up his notes.
Even so. I suppose you have samples of his handwriting?
I don't think there's a sample large enough to be compared with this letter. I used to type up all his letters, and when he did scientific articles, he'd dictate to me. There are signatures on checks I could get you.
So I guess he never used a fountain pen.
Not so far as I know, except in this letter.
Do you have a pen?
Oh, yes. Would you like to see it? I never loaned it to him. For one thing, it leaks a little.
Better have that taken care of before it leaks blue ink all over you.
Dr. Van Dusen, do you suppose there's a cipher in this letter? Mr. Stockton was very clever at hiding his formulas so they wouldn't be stolen. There's a wall safe in the cellar, a sort of vault where he'd make me place his notes.
Miss Devon, I'll hang on to the letter for the present. And you may regard me as being sufficiently interested in this case to help you.
get a hot case when the weather is lousy. I couldn't get a cab, and I'm soaked.
Hatch, if that's your roundabout way of asking for a second whiskey, don't bother. Take the bottle. But stop complaining and listen. Here, read this letter.
You sound like my editor at the paper.
Read.
So I'm talking, Dr. Van. I can read and listen at the same time.
I want you to go see his son, John Stockton. Find out whether there's any personal enmity between him and his stepsister, Elizabeth Devon. What was the cause of it? Another man? If so, who? Well, have you read it?
Twice over. Poor old Pomeroy, the inventor, could never get a job on my paper. It's grossly overwritten.
If he wrote it. Miss Devon suggested it may be written in that curiously overblown way to hide a cipher.
A cipher?
Like in cryptography? A hidden message?
I got it. You read every other line or every tenth word, and out comes a hidden message.
In that overwritten suicide letter, there is a cipher.
You figured it out already?
Now, let me ask the questions, all right? What's your report, Hatch?
Stepdaughter Elizabeth adopted 15 years ago before Pomeroy Stockton's wife died. Girl now 21 lives with him in Dorchester Street. She takes singing lessons, has no boyfriends. The son, John, unmarried, 31, lives at 84 Beacon, heads up a product marketing company in Boston, very successful, six-figure salary.
I want you to go see him right away. Wait for him to get home from work. Find out what division of property has been made by Pomeroy Stockton's will. Who gets what and how much? If, as the girl believes, Stockton was murdered, there must be a motive.
Oh, Dr. Van, don't send me out there in this weather. I'll never get a taxi.
I'm not asking you, Hatch. I'm telling you. Unless you're not interested in the story. With your byline...
Are you John Stockton?
That's me. Been waiting long?
Long enough. Your doorway doesn't keep out much weather.
Well, come on in. I just want to wheel this motorbike into the vestibule. You're Hutchinson Hatch from the Mail?
Sure. Yeah, I am. My editor called you at your office?
Yes. Sorry I'm late. Something to do with my father, right?
I gotta hand it to you, Mr. Stockton, riding that little motorized bicycle in the rain.
Rain, shine, or snow doesn't faze me. Take off your coat and come into the library. I had hoped the death of my father wouldn't come to the attention of the press. I don't want anything printed that would bring disgrace to his name.
Well, I'm sure there's nothing disgraceful in the truth. Wouldn't you rather have us print that than innuendo?
I guess I better tell you what I know. Even though I did everything I could to keep it out of the newspapers.
How much was your father's estate?
Something over $1 million. He made most of it through a device for coupling railroad cars. They're used all over the world.
And you would inherit how much of that?
Two-thirds, three-quarters. I'm not sure. Say, 800,000.
Mr. Stockton, what was the purpose of making it appear your father died naturally when obviously he committed suicide and there's even a suspicion it might be something else?
Something else? What do you mean?
Let me do the interview and then I'll answer you. Can you think of any motive for your father's suicide?
Not a one. That was why I was so stunned. There was positive evidence he killed himself. Anyway, what can I say, except that I persuaded a doctor friend of mine to report it a certain way to avoid a police inquiry and a scandal. Won't you tell me what the something else might be?
Elizabeth Devon.
Whatever.
She produced a letter found on your father, and she has said...
Oh, Lord. Elizabeth promised. She gave me her word of honor she'd never show that letter to anyone. She swore to me she'd destroyed it.
The beginning of any mystery always comes down to the fundamental question, who is lying and who is telling the truth? If lies are being told, why? To cover up what? Who gains? Who has what to hide? And when you come right down to it, could one corpse have died three ways? Of natural causes, suicide, and murder?
Thank you.
proud and successful businessman John Stockton is being interviewed by Hutchinson Hatch, a reporter, concerning the strange death of Stockton's father. What he does not know is that Hatch is also working for the criminologist Dr. Augustus Van Dusen. And what neither of them know is that a third person is hidden behind a door and listening.
I don't understand that girl, Mr. Hatch. We grew up together. Elizabeth promised he would
destroy the letter. Yes, she told us. You should also know that she inferred your father's death was not the suicide it appeared to be.
Not suicide? Well, she's crazy. Murder? Who could have killed my father? What motive would he have?
Tell me, was Miss Devon legally adopted?
Yes, so far as I know.
Doesn't it seem strange to you, then, that your father would give 3/4 of his $1 million estate to you? You're well off, successful, and only a small part to Miss Devon, who has nothing?
That's my father's business. Is that all?
I'll be direct. Why is there bad feeling between you and Miss Devon?
Who said there was? We just never got along together. My father and I had several arguments about her.
About what?
I'm not going into it.
Did you have such an argument the night before your father was found dead?
It's possible we might have said something. Is this going on much longer?
No, just a few more questions. You live here alone?
Yes, yes.
You have nothing that belongs to you at your father's house?
This is my home. I moved here to Beacon Street 5 years ago.
There's no one in the house here with you.
No one? Why do you ask?
I'll show you. How do you do, miss? What can I do for you?
Elizabeth, what are you doing here?
Yes, Dr. Van, it happened just the way I told you.
You opened the door, and there was Elizabeth Devon?
She made some lame excuse, turned, and ran out of the house. Funny part was, Stockton was glad to see her. He didn't seem to care she was listening behind the door.
Those two didn't get along. Why the secret visit?
Maybe she was doing some investigation herself.
Well, I've warned her not to play detective.
Dr. Van, will you be needing me anymore tonight? I'd like to get on home. My wife will be worried.
Call her. Tell her it'll be 2 a.m. and not to wait up for you.
2 a.m? How am I going to be at the paper at 8 a.m?
You'll manage. You always do.
Well, I hope this story's going to be worth it. I still haven't dried out from that storm.
Well, we'll have dinner. You can sit in front of the fire, dry out. And at midnight, you and I will pay a call at a certain cellar.
Beacon Street, where John Stockton lives?
No. Dorchester Street, where his father lived and died.
This cellar is enormous. A couple of rooms.
Careful where you walk, Hatch. Don't run into anything that can fall and make a noise.
I'm not moving. You are. Just standing here watching your flashlight.
So, you're not moving, eh?
I swear that wasn't me. The sound came from over there.
Shh, shh, shh.
I must be crazy creeping into somebody's cellar in the middle of the night. What are we looking for?
2 motives. For murder or suicide.
Someone's coming down the steps. Douse the light. Now, quick.
Over here, to the right.
Let go of me. Let go.
The heck I will. The idea of firing a pistol like that. You want to hit somebody?
Get off me!
Hey, voice sounds familiar. You John Stockton?
Are you burglars or what?
Where's the light switch?
Over by the stairs.
You can let him up now, Hatch, so he can turn on the light.
You men from the newspapers, don't you ever give up?
It is. John Stockton.
I knew who you were right away. That nosy reporter. Who's your friend?
Augustus SFX Van Dusen. Why did you try to kill us?
I thought you were burglars. I heard a noise down here in the cellar, so I came down to see.
I thought you lived on Beacon Street, Mr. Stockton.
I do, but I came here tonight on a little business of my own.
You have a key to this house?
I always had a key.
Suppose we go upstairs and tell Elizabeth Devon you're prowling about in her cellar.
No, don't tell her.
Why not?
You two don't seem to realize you're trespassing. I have more right here than you. This is my father's house. How'd you get in here?
all this?
Elizabeth!
John! Dr. Van Dusen! Would you mind explaining what you are all doing here?
You remember telling me about a wall safe in the cellar, Miss Devon? Your stepbrother came here tonight to open it up. Miss Devon, what is in that wall safe that would bring Mr. Stockton here in the dead of night?
Murderer. Thief.
Now, hold on, Miss Devon.
Why is John here? He came to rob the vault. My stepfather wouldn't give him the secret of his last invention. That's why you forced him to write that letter, wasn't it, John? And then killed him.
Elizabeth, for heaven's sake, what are you saying?
Dr. Van Dusen, his greed is so great, he wanted all of my stepfather's estate. He didn't want me to have a crumb.
Elizabeth, that's monstrous what you're saying.
It's true, isn't it? Well, I engaged Dr. Van Dusen to get to the bottom of father's mysterious death.
Mr. Stockton, it would shed a great deal of light if I could find some sample of your father's handwriting.
Well, I have some letters. I always carry them with me.
Oh, may I borrow them?
Certainly. But please, let me have them back.
I shall. Come along, Hatch.
Yeah?
Just a moment. Where are you going?
Back to the basement to examine that wall safe where you said Mr. Stockton Sr. kept his formulas.
Elizabeth, would you stay here with me a moment? I want to talk to you.
I don't know whether I can trust you, John.
It's back here a ways, Hatch. See where I'm pointing the light?
Strange, isn't it? John Stockton was so all-fired anxious to get to the vault. But now that Elizabeth is here, I don't know what to make of those two.
Where are they? Can you see them?
Still talking up above by the cellar stairs.
Oh, here it is.
Small metal door, that's the secret vault?
Well, not so secret anymore. The door is opened, and the vault is empty.
Someone's turned off the cellar lights again.
That revolver, I should have taken it away from him. It appears as though he shot himself.
Oh, we were standing by the stairs, talking. And then John said, follow me. I want to show you something. And then the cellar light went out. And he must have... Will he die? Here are all the handkerchiefs I could find. Oh, I wish I had some bandages.
Tie these handkerchiefs together for me, will you, Hatch? I'll just remove the gun from Mr. Stockton's hand. Good. Thanks, Hatch. He's not bleeding too heavily. We tie it around the wound, so... Miss Devon, why did you shoot him?
I didn't shoot him. He shot himself.
How about those powder marks on your right hand?
Powder? But how could you think that?
Mr. Hatch, phone for an ambulance and see if you can get the police over here on the double. I think this is a matter for them to handle. Tell them I want Miss Devon to be placed in custody on the charge of shooting this man.
But I didn't shoot him. I didn't.
John? John? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
We're sending for an ambulance. Why did Elizabeth shoot you? Can you hear me, John? Why did she shoot you?
She didn't. I did it myself.
Purposely?
I did it myself.
Stephen, Elizabeth, I beg your pardon. I made a mistake.
Will he die?
No. That was another mistake. He'll recover.
How is he, Dr. Van?
Actually well enough to get out of the hospital this very minute.
So?
So nothing. I've asked John to remain exactly where he is, inside that room.
I don't understand. Why?
I've asked him to help in a little charade, Hatch. If indeed he had a hand in his father's death, as Elizabeth Devon suspects, he'll show his hand. If, however, Elizabeth herself is implicated, she too will reveal her guilt.
I wish I knew how.
You will. Oh, hello, Elizabeth.
Dr. Van Dusen, have you been in to see John?
Well, the resident doctor thinks it better John doesn't have too many visitors.
But I must see him.
Of course. I do caution you, though. Don't excite him. I'm afraid the slightest undue strain on his heart might bring on severe complications.
Oh, I'll be most careful. I wouldn't want anything to happen to John. You know that, don't you?
Do I?
John, are you awake?
Hello, Elizabeth. I didn't expect to see you here.
You didn't think I'd come to the hospital to visit my own stepbrother?
No.
You're the only brother I've got.
Why did you come?
I had to. I feel very close to you. That's why.
Do you?
Yes.
I wish you had felt that way 5 years ago.
I was very resentful then. You were wicked, John, to do what you did.
You were 16. A child. You would have wrecked your life.
Who are you to judge how another person wishes to live? I loved him. I loved him with all my heart. And you ruined it.
You were childish and stupid. I hope you've grown up since then.
I've grown up. I've learned there's only one way to get along in life, and that is to be hard.
Is that why you slipped the gun out of my pocket and shot me? Is it, Elizabeth?
Why did you say you'd shot yourself? If you knew it was me?
I've been asking myself that question every hour I've been lying in this bed. Why didn't I realize the kind of worthless person you were years ago? What is this crazy feeling I still have for you that drives me up the walls?
Maybe you still love me, John.
Go away from me. Go away. I don't want to see you or have anything to do with you. Nurse! Nurse!
No one can hear you, dear John. No, I won't let you press that buzzer for a nurse. Shall I tell you something?
Nurse, please, help me.
I hate you. I shall never stop hating you. I hope you die.
Nurse!
Is it older than Cain and Abel, the spirit of revenge? Vengeance is mine, I will repay. Is an ancient cry and modern. In Elizabeth Devon, one can almost hear the echo of a malevolent Catherine the Great, a Clytemnestra, a Charlotte Corday, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, blood for blood. I shall return shortly with Act Three. Recall the events for you. Adopted by a wealthy inventor, Elizabeth Devon seems to have borne a grudge and a hatred for her stepbrother, John. The famed criminologist, Augustus Van Dusen, stands with her in the very room where the inventor died.
Yes, Dr. Van Dusen, this is where I found my stepfather's body. The last time I saw him alive was Monday. He told me his work was almost complete, and expected it would be worth a fortune.
Well, that must have been the copper hardening process.
At 5 o'clock, John came over and went in here to see his father. How long he stayed, I don't know. Mondays I have a singing lesson and I eat out, so I made a sandwich and put it with a glass of milk and some fruit on a tray for my stepfather and left it in the kitchen. I got home about 9. The food hadn't been touched.
Were you alarmed? Did you come up here to Pomeroy Stockton's workroom to see what was the matter?
I didn't, because he often skips a meal. Especially when he's on the home stretch of some problem. He won't be disturbed.
And then the next morning?
I found him here in this room, right by that desk. The bottle of prussic acid I gave you on the floor.
Well, thank you, Elizabeth. That's very helpful.
Is there anything else you'd like me to do?
Yes, there is. I'd like you not to leave Boston, Elizabeth, without informing me. Dr. Benton, I believe you issued a death certificate for Pomeroy Stockton?
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm. How well do you know Elizabeth Devon?
Only what John has told me. An adopted daughter who, for some reason, kept her own name. 5 years ago, she had a love affair. Some local beach boy, I think. She was only 16. John really got uptight about it. I think he was sort of keen on her himself, but she's never given him a tumble.
Is there still time to perform an autopsy?
Pomeroy Stockton's body has not yet been buried. It's still in the receiving vault. Seems neither his son nor stepdaughter have made arrangements for the burial. I had a call from the medical examiner this morning. It's essential I tell John what the examiner told me.
Which was?
I prefer to tell John first. But I can say to you, it is the most extraordinary situation I've ever encountered in all my years of medical practice.
Alan, send in Mr. Hatch now, will you? Mr. Sloan, good of you to see me on such short notice, especially at the end of a long working day.
We lawyers have no hours.
I understand you are the attorney for the estate.
I am, but I wish I weren't.
Is there a problem?
Unbelievable, there it is. I can't locate the will.
You got it here?
Mr. Hatch, this is off the record. If Stockton's son or his stepdaughter or any of the other beneficiaries were to find out, I'd look pretty foolish. The darn will has either been mislaid, misfiled, lost, or it could have been stolen. Right now, I don't have the remotest idea where it is. It's off the record.
Do you remember what the will provided?
Well, the bulk of the estate to John, $5,000 a year to Miss Devon, and she gets the Dorchester house. That's about it.
What happens if the will's never found?
Then Stockton has died intestate. Oh, the son inherits. Whatever he wishes to settle on his stepsister is up to him.
Well, Mr. Sloan, thank you for your time. I hope that will turns up.
I have a sneaking suspicion that it may never.
I wonder if I might use your phone.
Certainly. Help yourself.
Hello, Van Dusen here.
I'm just leaving the attorney's office now. Any instructions?
John Stockton has disappeared from the hospital. Elizabeth came and picked him up at 6:30 when the nurses were on their break. Get over here, Hatch. On the double.
Elizabeth, I can't say I understand you at all. For years, you've hated me.
Oh, no, John.
All right, forget the past. What about yesterday? Those cruel things you said in the hospital.
I didn't mean them. Please believe me.
I don't know what to believe. Today, you're a completely different person. You bring me home, make a beautiful dinner for us. You are a girl full of surprises.
Maybe I surprise myself. There are lots of things about me I don't like.
You even moved my moped out of the driveway into the garage to keep it safe. Now, don't tell me you're not likable.
John, we've wasted too many years. I don't want to talk about the past. What do you have to drink?
Scotch. My tastes haven't changed in the last 5 years. So many questions I have to ask you. Hiring this criminologist, this Dr. Van Dusen, and...
Do you know I haven't got a drop of scotch in the house?
Too late now. The stores are closed. I'll drink anything.
Oh, no, that isn't right.
I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll hop on my moped, grab a bottle from my house, and be back as quickly as I can.
Would you, John? That's terribly sweet. Lord in heaven, it's done. It's done. It's all over.
Unbelievable.
That man leads a charmed life, runs his moped into a brick wall. 2 narrow escapes in 24 hours. Where's John Stockton now, Dr. Van?
In his own house on Beacon Street with a 24-hour guard.
Guard? Who are you protecting him from?
I'm not sure. You can thank his lucky stars he's got a very hard head. When I got to Elizabeth's, he was sitting up in a chair with an ice pack on his head, maybe a bruise or two, but no other damage. What time is it?
2 in the morning. Which reminds me, good night, Dr. Van. If I go home now, I'll still have a wife.
Doesn't it strike you peculiar, John driving his moped into the wall at one side of her driveway?
Well, maybe he was a little off his balance. He was shot in the head yesterday, you know.
More I think about it, more I wonder. Hatch, we're on our way to Dorchester Street.
We are.
To give that driveway to Elizabeth's house a thorough going over.
What do you expect to find?
Answers. Shine your flashlight straight down. Can you shield it with your hand? I don't want Elizabeth out here asking questions before I have them.
Then what?
Now, move your flashlight to where I'm standing, Hatch. Answers, I told you. I know the why, but I'm not exactly sure as to the how. Now, walk up the driveway with me, keeping your circle of light to the right of mine.
I can see the skid marks, all right.
Yes. They start here, right at this point. Looks as if the moped suddenly hit something and skidded against that wall. Will you look at that?
Look at what?
See where I'm aiming my flashlight? 18 inches off the ground. See those cuts in the bark of the tree stem?
Sure do. Looks like knife cuts all the way around.
Stay where you are. I'm going to have a look at the tree directly opposite on the other side of the driveway. Don't move, Hatch. I'm getting my bearings from you. Yes, just as I suspected.
Dr. Van, Elizabeth just walked out the door and is heading this way.
I thought it was you two gentlemen.
Elizabeth, would you have a look at this piece of wire tied around this tree? It's been cut off, but I suggest you put it here. You strung a wire from this tree here right across your driveway to that tree opposite. That is what John Stockton ran into last night, and it could very well have killed him. That's what you wanted, isn't it?
Dr. Van Dusen, I think you're out of your mind.
Of course, you wouldn't have needed bullets or wires if I'd believed that cipher you wrote.
I wrote?
I'll show you how you tried to implicate John. Remember how that fake suicide note begins? Tired of it all, I seek an end and am content. Ambition is dead, and so on and so forth. Reading every fifth word, and you knew I would solve it, the ciphered message is, I am dead at the hand of my son, and so forth. Miss Devon, whatever made you think I'd believe it? Would a man at the point of a gun write an elaborate suicide letter with a hidden message in it? Then all you had to do was put a dab of prussic acid on the dead man's lips to complete the suicide charade.
Are you quite finished?
Not quite.
Next you'll be saying that I killed my stepfather.
But you didn't. Pomeroy Stockton did die of natural causes. The medical examiner is positive. He did die of a heart attack, and well, you know it. It was you who went to the lengths of making it appear to be a murder, disguised as a suicide.
Oh, good afternoon, gentlemen. Come in.
Hey, you're on your feet. How about that, Dr. Van?
Come in, come in. I'm just having lunch. Kitchen's this way. Sit down, and I'll pour you some coffee.
John, do you know that Elizabeth has left town?
Yes. Our lawyer, Fred Sloan, was here this morning. Told me she'd handed him the keys and told him to sell the house on Dorchester Street and everything in it. So I might just buy it. It was Father's.
I'm going to be candid, John. That girl was no good for you. She went to elaborate lengths to get even with you for something that happened years ago, and to get rid of you and inherit everything.
Fred told me the same thing. How could I have been so naive?
Mr. Stockton, there was $1 million at stake.
Even more, I guess. Dad's formula for copper hardening. I don't know where it disappeared to. The last evening I was with him, we agreed I would market his process. But then, when he killed himself...
He didn't, John. It really was a heart attack. Elizabeth found him and manufactured the whole scenario, the prussic acid, the letter. And when her scenario didn't play, she tried to kill you.
Would you mind, Dr. Pendusen? Don't say any more. I don't like to hear all that.
I've searched everywhere for your father's formula. Like his will, it's disappeared.
Sit still, I'll go. You home to anyone, Mr. Stockton?
Home? Oh, sure, sure.
And she has left town, I'm told. Disappeared. Of course, she has committed no actual crime.
If she's gone, that's it. Why should I chase after her and prosecute her?
The messenger delivered this envelope for you, Mr. Stockton.
Don't give it to me. Throw it away. I don't want it.
You recognize the handwriting on the envelope, don't you, John?
Yes.
It's Elizabeth's, isn't it?
Yes. I'm being childish, I know.
You don't have to open it now. Just take it.
It's a strange feeling that's come over me. I can't really describe it.
Well, try to. You'll feel better for saying it.
Just now, her letter. I felt as if I was seeing my own coffin. Oh, this is too self-indulgent. Of course I'll open it. Lord in heaven.
It's full of ashes. Nothing but ashes.
Yeah. Have a look at these pieces that fell on the table. There. The words, last will and test. And here, equations. More equations.
How cruel. How terribly cruel. Elizabeth, why did she do it? What happiness could this awful thing bring her? To burn his will and his formula? It's like my father has just died. All over again.
A woman dares all things when she either loves or hates. And this curious tale, adapted from the pen of that master crime storyteller Jacques Futrelle, illustrates to what lengths one's soul can twist and one's hate can transform. Unfortunate, because in the end, the very things sought are those never to be gained. Revenge is its own executioner. What will not ambition and revenge descend to? Who aspires must fall low, as high he soared. Revenge at first, though sweet, bitter ere long, as back on itself recoils. The poet John Milton. The poem, Paradise Lost. Indeed, that is what our story today was about. Paradise Lost. Our cast included Robert Dryden, Jada Rowland, Gordon Gould, and Jackson Beck. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown.
As I said, that was 1980, which is almost new by our standards. What we have coming up next for you is an episode of The Strange Dr. Weird. This short-lived series only ran for 29 episodes in 1944 and 1945. This particular episode, The Secret Room, ran on February the 13th of 1945.
The Strange Dr. Weird.
Good evening. Come in, won't you? Why, what's the matter? You seem a bit nervous. Perhaps the cemetery outside this house has upset you. But there are things far worse than cemeteries. For instance, knowing that you are cut off from the world and that death awaits you inevitably, as in the story I want to tell you tonight. A story I call The Secret Room. My story begins late one night in a lonely section of the Hudson Valley. A few yards away from the huge old Baxter mansion, two men hide behind a large elm tree, studying the mansion closely. By the half light of the moon, initials can be seen on the backs of their blouses. The initials PW, standing for Prisoner of War.
Cloud, why are you wasting time watching that house? Any minute now, they discover back at the poison camp that we killed that guard and escaped.
I'm not wasting my time. See that little gray-haired man there in the house, talking to the big fat man?
Yeah, sure. What about him?
He's going to supply us with money, clothes, and food.
Ah, what about secret agent?
No, it's my father.
Your father?
Yes. He brought me into this country as a child. He's caretaker of the house. For 15 years I lived in the house. If I was old enough to run away and join the army, the Third Reich.
Oh, 15 years in America. That's why you speak such perfect English.
Yes.
Carl, it's your father. He's a Nazi.
No. The old man's one of those stupid fools who believes in democracy.
And the other man in there, who's he?
John Baxter, the owner of the house. Come on.
What are we going to do?
We're going to get food, money, and clothes from him. He'll give it to us because I have this gun.
Hans, I'd better start back for the city. You're sure you won't come with me?
No, thank you, Mr. Baxter.
I don't like leaving you all alone in this house now that you're ill.
But, Mr. Baxter, I don't mind. Just a telephone here. Really, I'll be quite...
Good evening, gentlemen.
Well, Carl. Carl. No, it can't...
Yes, Father. Carl.
I thought you were in Germany. What are you doing here?
Hans, don't you understand? Look at their uniforms. They're escaped prisoners of war.
So, Carl, you fought with the Nazi scum against humanity. You are one of the scoundrels who...
Perhaps that'll teach you to speak with more respect to a soldier of the Third Reich.
Why, you dirty coward. Striking your own father.
Quiet, you get the same thing.
Now listen to me, both of you. My friend and I need food, clothes, money. If either of you gives us the slightest bit of trouble, I'll kill you. Mother. You stand guard over these two men with a gun while I get some food in the kitchen.
Jawohl, Herr Leutnant. So, old man, you actually believe that the United States can defeat the armies of the Third Reich? What a fool you are.
Here, Franz. Here's some food for you. I've got... Franz, where's Baxter?
Baxter? He's sitting like... He's gone.
You fool, he escaped. Give me that gun.
But he was sitting right in that chair.
Come on. We've got to find him if he... Listen.
That's right, Sheriff. Two escaped war prisoners. One of them has a gun. You'd better hurry over here before...
So here you are. Put that down. Put the phone down. Or...
Sheriff, they've caught him.
Little teacher, you swine.
Mr. Baxter. You've killed
him. Yes. Franz, hang up the receiver.
Jawohl. What do we do? The sheriff knows we are here now.
Oh, you fool. If you'd watched Baxter closely, this never would have happened.
I only turned my back to him for a moment. I had no
idea. The sheriff will be here in a few minutes. There's no use our running for it. They'd have every road blocked.
But we can't stay here.
Wait a minute. We can stay here.
There's a secret room in the cellar of this house.
A secret room in the cellar?
Yes. I remember when I was a boy, the high and mighty Baxter family had an uncle who wasn't right in the head. They were ashamed to let the world know about it, so they kept him a prisoner in a secret room. My father can show us where that is. Where is it, Father?
I'll never show you.
Oh, yes, you will, or I'll kill you just as I killed Baxter.
Then go ahead. Shoot.
Oh, no. No, no. That would be quick, easy. I believe in putting a man to death slowly, like this.
Oh, Carl. Just go off me.
You see, this way, it takes hours.
No.
Yes.
No.
Will you show us that, the secret room?
Yes. Yes.
Now, you're being sensible. But hurry. The stupid sheriff and his men will soon be here.
While Dr. Weird looks for skeletons in the closet, let's take a quick look into your wardrobe. If there's an Adam hat in there, that's fine. If there's more than one Adam hat, that's even better. Because it takes more than one good hat to make a man's wardrobe complete. Every well-dressed man knows this, and well-dressed men also know that you can't go wrong with Adam hats. For there's no better hat value anywhere in America. Adam hats are made of fine fur felt, smartly fashioned, smartly blocked. You can choose from a wide variety of shades and a complete assortment of all the latest styles. You can easily afford more than one Adam because they are sensibly priced. You're welcome to stop in and look at the latest Adam hats in your nearest Adam hat shop. Now, Dr. Weird.
And now to continue my story, the secret room. It is a few minutes later. Holding a flashlight in one hand, Hans Reiner leads the two escaped Nazis through the huge, musty old cellar. Karl, his gun in his hand, cautiously follows a few feet behind his father. In front, staggering under the weight of John Baxter's body, brings up the rear. At last, Hans comes to a stop.
Here we are. Oh, very clever. One would never suspect there's a secret room behind that solid stone wall. How do you make a section of the wall open, old man?
I press this concealed button here.
Carl, look, the wall has opened.
Yes. Old man, shine your flashlight into the room. It's rather small, but it'll do for a few hours. All right, Franz, go on in. You too, Father.
Very well.
All right, old man. Close the door.
Very well. Now, it cannot be opened from the outside unless you know where the button is.
Good. Now, all we have to do is stay in here until the sheriff and his men have searched the house. When they find it empty, they'll leave.
Then you and I, Carl, we'll be able to make plans.
Yes.
Plans that will take us back to the fatherland.
Yes. Once again, we shall have proven the superiority of the master race.
They've been gone for over an hour. Surely it's safe to leave now.
Yes, I think it's safe. All right, old man, open the door.
Open the door. I'm afraid I can't.
You can't? What do you mean?
This door only opens from the outside.
It only opens from the outside? No. No, I forced it open.
Franz, you fool, stop throwing yourself against the door. Stop it, I said.
But he said the door only opens from the outside. That means we're trapped.
What kind of a Nazi are you? Going to pieces like that? Can't you see he's lying? Would he be here if there wasn't any way to open the door from the inside?
Yeah, you're right. He would not have allowed himself to be trapped in here, too. So, you sign, you lie to us, would you take this? Now, open that door quickly before I hit you again.
I told you, the door can only be opened from the outside.
Oh, you're going to be difficult, huh? Well, we're quite experienced in making men talk. Franz, hold his arms back.
Double card.
Before I'm through with you, you'll wish that you'd open that door when I first asked you to.
No! 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 No!
Carl, he's regaining consciousness.
Yes, we'll have to get it out of him this time. Can't last much longer.
Yeah, he's already half dead.
Well, are you ready to show us how to open that door?
I tell you, it can't be opened from in here.
You're lying, I tell you. If that were true, you wouldn't have allowed yourself to be trapped in here with us.
Do you think I mind dying in here?
What do you mean?
My heart. The doctor gave me only a few months to live.
What's that?
Yes. That is why I was willing to show you this secret room. I don't mind dying as long as you two die with me.
You deliberately led us into this trap.
Yes. I can think of no better way to die than taking you two Nazi rats with me.
No.
You'll never get out of here.
No.
Never. Someday, they'll find us still here. Four white skeletons.
Why, you... Oh.
Carl, he's dead.
Yes.
Carl, we're trapped. Trapped, you understand? He wasn't lying. We can't get out. They're going to die in here, Carl. We're going to die.
Too bad about Carl and France, isn't it?
Imagine being trapped in a small room with solid stone walls, hour after hour, day after day, growing weaker all the time, until finally... But perhaps they both took the easy way out and used the gun they had. By the way, if you're thinking of buying an old mansion in the Hudson Valley, I'd look very carefully in the cellar for a secret room if I were you. After all, you wouldn't want to live in a house that was haunted by the ghosts of two... Oh, you have to go now? Well, perhaps you'll drop in on me again soon. Just look for the house on the other side of the cemetery. The house of Dr. Weir.
Just in case you're confused, this is not the History Channel. Yeah, those were Nazis. But this is not the History Channel. And by the way, the station tells me that whenever I decide to leave in commercials in these old radio shows, that I should read this disclaimer. So here it comes. A disclaimer. Well, maybe I wasn't supposed to read that part. You may from time to time hear the original commercials that played with these vintage radio shows and our rebroadcast of them. Be assured that the presence of these spots in no way reflects any commercial or underwriting relationship between this show or station and those products or services, or should they be taken as an endorsement of them. These spots are left in so as to enhance the historical experience for you, our listeners. Well, it's the top of the second hour, and those of you who have been listening for a little while might have noticed that I've developed a pattern of playing a science fiction story at the top of the second hour. And today's no different. Today, we have an episode of X Minus One from March the 6th of 1957. This radio play is based on a short story of the same name, published in 1953 by Galaxy Magazine. In 1965, this short story was the basis of the film The Tenth Victim, starring Ursula Andress and Marcello Mastroianni. I can't recommend strongly enough that you track down and read some Robert Sheckley. X Minus One dramatized a number of his short stories. This is the second one I've played so far. A little while ago, we played Skulking Permit. None of these plays do justice to the satirical and witty Mr. Sheckley. I've been thinking a little bit about maybe starting a website where I'd be able to actually, in some cases, post the original short stories from which many of the radio plays that I play here are derived. I mean, it's not uncommon at all. I may consider doing that. I'd like to know if any of you out there would be interested in that. You can write me at nighttransmissions@gmail.com and let me know. Now, that's night transmissions, and that's one word, no space between the night and the transmissions. nighttransmissions@gmail.com. All right, well, I'm going to stop yapping now and let you listen to this.
From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents X minus one. We go forward in time to the days when war has been outlawed. And in its place, there is a system of carefully controlled, legalized murder. The story, The Seventh Victim, by Robert Sheckley.
Is that the mail, Jenny? Bring it right in.
No, it isn't the mail. Are you anxious, Stan?
Well, you know how it is when you're waiting for notification. It's been 2 weeks. The government's behind schedule, as usual.
Oh, that's always the way it is. Now, when you get to be my age, you won't worry about it anymore. At 73, you can afford to wait for the mail. Well, how about the ad? Have you got it done?
Sure, E.J. Want me to play it back for you? Of course, I recorded it myself. We'll have an actor in for the actual recording. You ready?
Now, go ahead.
Hi there, neighbor. When you're in a crowd, when you're among strangers, do you feel safe? Are you protected by that vital underarm area? You aren't, unless you own a Protect Suit. The finest tailoring in the world has gone into a Morger and Freeline Protect Suit to make it the leader in men's fashion. Protect Suit is the safest as well as the smartest. Every Protect Suit comes with special built-in gun pocket, guaranteed not to bulge.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
A touch of the concealed button throws the gun into your hand, cocked, safety off. Why not drop into the Protect store nearest you? Why not be all safe?
Oh, that's fine, Stan. That's fine. That's a very nice, dignified commercial. And you can relax. I picked up the mail just before I came in. Here's your notification.
That's it. Look, from the ECB, that's the baby.
Oh, you're not going to open it now.
Oh, no, of course not. No one is supposed to know the victim's name except the hunter.
That's right. Have a good hunt, boy. You need a kill. You've been all keyed up.
Well, it's too bad you have to retire, E.J.
Well, I got into the tens club. 10 hunts. That's not such a bad record.
10 hunts, of course not. 10 hunts, and then, of course, victim in between. That's 20 kills.
Mm-hmm.
I sure hope my victim isn't anyone like you.
Don't worry about it. What number will this be?
My 7th.
Oh, lucky 7. Go to it. We'll get you into the tens club yet. By the way, I got a circular in the mail. Maybe you'd like to use it.
Maybe. Victims, why take chances? Use an O'Donovan accredited spotter. Let us locate your assigned killer. Pay after you get him. Oh, well, thanks a lot, E.J., but I've got my own spotter. Very good fellow.
Yeah, well, I suppose you're anxious to get home. Open up and find out who your victim is.
What's that?
Oh, shooting down the hall. I guess somebody got his victim. Good for him, eh?
You bet. Oh, it feels wonderful, E.J. I feel alive again.
Morrow's Garage.
Hello, Ed. Freeline.
Oh, hi, Mr. Freeline.
I'm going out on one, Ed.
What?
Well, good luck, Mr. Freeline. I suppose you want me to stand by.
Yeah, that's right. I don't expect to be gone more than a week or two. I'll probably get my notification of victim status within 3 months of the kill.
Well, I'll be standing by. Good hunting, Mr. Freeline.
You'll be sure to save time for me now, Ed. I'd hate to be caught as a victim without a first-class spotter on my side, huh?
No, now, don't you worry, Mr. Freeline. I'll be right there in your corner. I've got a couple of good ideas for an ambush that I haven't tried yet.
Good, good. Well, I'll get back in touch with you right after the kill. So long.
Mr. Freeline?
What are you doing in my apartment?
Allow me my card. Emmanuel Gale, Emotional Catharsis Bureau.
What do you want from me?
Oh, just a standard spot check in reorientation. I see you've got your notification.
Yeah, that's right. I haven't opened it yet. Do you mind?
No, go right ahead. Yes. Anything wrong, Mr. Freeline? Everything there. Photographs, address, description data.
Yes, but it says Janet Marie Patzig. Janet Marie? I've never killed a female. Is this in order?
Well, just a moment till I check my list. Yes, that's right. The girl registered with the board under her own free will. The law says she has the same rights and privileges as a man.
Could you tell me how many kills she has?
Well, I'm sorry, sir, but the only information you're allowed is the victim's legal status and the descriptive data that you've received.
Could I draw another?
Well, you can refuse the hunt, of course. That's your legal right, but you'll not be allowed another victim until you have served.
Women always trying to horn in on a man's game. Why can't they stay home? Just doesn't seem feminine. Look, Gail, do you mind if I start packing?
No. Go right ahead. If you like, you can give me the historical checkout while you pack, and I'll just tick it off here on my list.
Well, all right. Where do you want me to start?
Question one, I think. When was the Emotional Catharsis Board established?
Well, the board was formed at the end of the Fourth World War, or the Sixth. Depends on if you count the new Argentina war.
Well, either count will do. Go ahead.
Well, let's see. Weapons increased in magnitude, efficiency, and exterminating power. Soldiers became accustomed to them, and it looked as if another war would be the war to end all wars. Would you hand me those shirts, please?
Yes, of course.
So, this time, the peace had to last for all time, but the government recognized the presence of a need for violence in a large percentage of mankind. They recognized the validity of competition, love of battle in the face of overwhelming odds, and these, they felt, were admirable traits for the race. So their problem was to arrange a lasting peace that would stop the race from destroying itself without removing responsible traits. I'll just get a new toothbrush in New York.
Very good, very good. All right, Mr. Freeline. Now, if you could run down the basic rules.
Well, anyone who wants to signs up with ECB for a fine, legal murder. Then, of course, he has to take his turn a few months later, if he survives. The Emotional Catharsis Board picks the victim's names at random. A hunter is allowed 6 months to make his kill.
Armament?
Yeah. He's allowed to use a standard caliber pistol. He can wear no armor. Victim is allowed to wear armor and is allowed to hire spotters.
Very good, very good. Now, we don't have to go over the penalties for killing or wounding the wrong man. I'm sure you know all that.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful system, isn't it? All the people who want to kill can, and that's about one-fourth of the population. Those who don't want to don't have to. At least there aren't any more big wars, just hundreds of thousands of small ones. All right, Mr. Freeline, you're checked out for orientation.
All the same, I don't exactly like the idea of killing a woman. But she did sign up, didn't she?
Yeah, that's right.
Janet Patzig in New York. Well, I'll be taking one of our Protect Suit specials. Have you seen one of these, Mr. Gale? When I actuate the mechanism, watch how fast the gun springs out at the ready.
Oh, Excellent. It's excellent.
Ah, strange, isn't it, Mr. Gale? Each killing is a new excitement. It's something you just don't tire of, like a French pastry or women or drinking or anything else.
Yeah.
Let's see. There. I guess that's it. Now a note for the milkman, and that's about all. Well, I'll be getting along, Mr. Gale.
Yeah. Oh, and good hunting, Mr. Freeline.
Where to, Chief?
Carlton Hotel.
Carlton, you bet. Just get into town?
Is it that noticeable?
I've been picking up from the airport for maybe 10 years. I can spot an out-of-town killer by the way he carries his suitcase.
You wouldn't be working as a spotter, would you?
Oh, no. The Hack Bureau don't like it. This isn't your first kill, I can tell.
Yeah?
Yeah, guys on their first kill get too anxious. They want to drive right to the victim's address, walk right into an ambush. I'd say you had maybe 5, 6...
7.
7? Well, you haven't got too long to go before you get into the tens club.
You ever been hunting?
Nah, I can't afford it.
Look, I'll tell you what. If you can just drive me around the Chelsea area, I'd just like to look at the streets.
Aha, that's where your victim hangs out, huh? Sure, be glad to. You know what you ought to do, Mac?
Hmm?
You ought to drop in at the hunter hunting show at the Coliseum. They got everything. Bulletproof vests for victims, hats with bulletproof crowns. I seen an ad for a Malvern straight shot ECB approved. Carried a load of 12 shots with a deviation of less than 1/1 inch per 1,000 feet.
Well, it sounds like a fine gun.
And they got all kinds of trick things. You know, canes with 4-shot magazines, 45 caliber flashlights, all kinds of things.
Well, those kind of novelties are all right for the first time, but the old-fashioned ways are the best.
Hey, look at that. Somebody got it.
I missed it.
Nothing to see now. In about 4 minutes, the guys from the Department of Sanitation will carry away the corpse.
Yeah.
Well, this is the neighborhood, Chief. You want to give me the address?
No, I'll just drive around.
Okay, you're paying a meter.
Now, wait a minute.
What is it, Chief?
There. That sidewalk cafe, you see?
Yeah, shall I stop?
No, just drive slowly. There she is. Sitting at a table.
You mean the victim is a dame?
Yeah, she's just sitting there. She crazy, exposing herself in the open?
Boy, that's sure no way to stay healthy. Not when you're a victim.
Drive around the block.
Okay.
Yeah, she looks younger than her pictures. She looks sad. Wonder if she's been notified.
Well, she's got to be notified, Chief. They can't send you your notice until her signed receipt gets back to the office. It's automatic.
That's right. Isn't she even going to try to defend herself?
Doesn't look like it. Here we come again. She's still there.
All I have to do is just ride by in a cab and pump a bullet into her.
Okay, Chief, I'll go real slow. You be sure to allow for the motion of the car.
No. Park across the street.
Sure.
Both her hands are on top of the table. An easy stationary target. All I gotta do is...
Say, that's some gadget. Hey, remember to roll down a window before you shoot that gun, huh?
Nah, it's an easy shot. It's too easy.
Look, mister, hurry up, will you? If a cop comes along and finds you shooting out of my cab, he'll give me a ticket for double parking.
Nah, it's too easy. All my other 6 kills have been hard. My victims have tried every dodge. One of them hired a dozen spotters. I got them all. I dressed as a milkman.
Hey, that's pretty clever.
Nah, this wouldn't be a trophy. Here, put your flag up. I'm getting out.
Okay.
Going over to talk to her.
She's your victim.
I know. It's too easy this way. Hey, look, if I'm being fresh, just tell me and I'll go. I'm an out-of-towner here on a convention. I'd just like to talk to somebody. If you'd rather, I didn't.
Oh, I don't care.
May I
Sit down. Like to buy you a drink, if I can?
I don't care.
My name is Stanton Freeline.
I'm Janet.
Janet what?
Janet Patsick.
Well, nice to know you. Are you doing anything tonight, Janet?
I'm probably being killed tonight.
Oh, are you a victim?
You guessed it. If I were you, I'd stay out of the way. No sense getting hit by mistake.
Well, you're awfully calm about it. Don't you care? Haven't you got any spotters?
No. Mr. Freeline, I'm a bad, bad girl.
Huh?
I got the idea I'd like to commit a murder, so I signed for ECB. Then I couldn't do it.
Oh, I am sorry.
But I'm still in, of course, even though I didn't shoot. I still have to be a victim.
Well, why don't you hire some spotters?
I couldn't kill anyone. I just couldn't. I don't even have a gun.
Well, you got a lot of courage coming out in the open this way.
What can I do? You can't hide from a hunter, not a real one. I don't have enough money to make a disappearance.
Well, since it's your own defense, I should think...
No, I've made up my mind about that. This whole thing is wrong, this whole system. When I had my victim in the sights, I saw how easily I could... Oh, let's forget it. I'm glad you talked to me. At least it'll pass the time. It's been a lovely dinner. Just lovely.
Well, I'm glad you liked it. I usually stop at this little place when I'm in New York.
Do you come in often?
Oh, on business. I mean clothing, you know. What do you do?
Oh, I'm an actress. Well, that's a laugh. I'm not really an actress. I'd like to be an actress, but none of the producers seem to see it that way.
How old are you?
22. I've only been in New York for a year.
You're really being very foolish just sitting out in the open that way. Why, you're a hunter. Could come along and just pump a bullet into you.
I know, but somehow I feel safe with you.
Oh. Say, Janet, would you like to go to the gladiatorials with me tonight? We got about 20 minutes. We'd only miss the opening numbers.
Well, I suppose so. Might as well, huh? Eat, drink, and be merry.
I'm a little disappointed.
Why?
Oh, I thought the New York gladiatorials would be something special. It's about the same as Cleveland. Historical events, swordsmen and netmen, duels with sabers and foil.
Isn't there any difference?
Well, a duel to the death is the same in Cleveland as it is in New York.
You know, that's funny. I used to think that gladiatorials were very exciting. Now they just make me a little sick.
Well, you can get tired of the best of shows. Frankly, I think it was a mistake starting to televise the gladiatorials. It cut down on the box office for one thing, and for another, it just isn't the same as being right there in the stadium, you know?
No, it isn't.
Well, want to stay for the second half? Let me see. They got bullfighting, lion fighting, bow and arrow, and dueling on the high wire.
No, I've had about enough.
All right. Shall I take you home?
Would you please? Sit down. I'll fix you a drink.
Janet.
What?
You're crying, aren't you?
Oh, no, not really. It's just the thought that any minute from anywhere a bullet can come crashing into me. It makes me feel so soft and helpless.
You are soft. Janet.
You're leaving New York soon?
I suppose so. Convention's only lasting another day.
I'll be sorry to see you go. Send roses to my funeral.
Janet.
What?
Janet, I don't want you to be killed.
There's not anything you can do about it, is there?
Janet, I love you.
Oh, Stan.
What is it? Please, darling.
You can't. You can't love me. I'm a victim. I won't live long enough to...
You won't be killed, Janet. Listen to me, Janet, darling.
I'm your hunter.
Are you going to kill me?
Don't be ridiculous. Darling, I'm going to marry you.
Oh, Stan, Stan, my darling. Oh, the waiting. I've been so frightened.
It's all over. Think what a story it'll make for our kids,
oh,
huh?
Oh, darling.
How I came to murder you and left marrying you.
Oh, Stan, kiss me. I think I'd better have a cigarette.
Let's start packing.
You haven't asked if I love you.
What?
You haven't admired my cigarette lighter.
What are you talking about?
It's a lovely lighter, isn't it? With a small hole in the bottom. Just large enough for a .38 caliber bullet.
No, don't.
I'm not being funny, darling.
Jana, I love you. I told you, I love you. What's the matter with you?
I don't love you, Stanton. I am a good actress, aren't I? Even though the producers don't think so.
You knew all along.
Yes, of course. Don't reach for that. Yes, darling. Well, now I can join the Tens Club.
You have just heard X-1 presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine. X-1 has brought you The Seventh Victim, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Robert Sheckley and adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in the cast, Lawson Zerbe as Freeline, Terry Keane as Janet, his killer, Frank Maxwell as the cab driver, Ian Martin as Emmanuel Gale of the Emotional Catharsis Bureau, Irv West as Freeline Spotter, and Arthur Hughes as his business partner. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Kenneth McGregor and is an NBC Radio Network production.
And now for a shorty. This 5-minute story is part of the LibriVox production and was published in November of 1963 by Analog Science Fiction Magazine.
Untechnological Employment. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Reader's note, this story takes the form of a volley of teletype messages between the United States Pacific Spaceport and the White House in Washington, D.C. TWX is Teletype Writer Exchange. Untechnological Employment, subtitled, "The reaction would not have been so deeply bitter if only it hadn't worked," by E.M. Clinton, Jr. TWX White House to Colonel K.A. Brown, Commander, Pacific Spaceport. Congress pressure high. Investigation imminent. Must have full information why moon launches behind schedule. TWX Colonel K.A. Brown to White House. Unseasonably constant bad weather prevents launching for past 3 weeks. TWX White House to Brown, PSP. What kind of bad weather? TWX Colonel K.A. Brown to White House. Fog. TWX White House to Brown, PSP. Congress pressure greater. Bad publicity involved. Russians are launching on schedule. Why can't we? Something must be done. TWX Colonel K.A. Brown to White House. Still fogged in. TWX White House to Brown, PSP. Chairman Senate Space Committee says fly this week or he will investigate. TWX Colonel K.A. Brown to White House. Sir, investigate. TWX White House to Colonel A.A. Newman, Commander, Pacific Spaceport. Expect you to act immediately solving previous administration problems. Re-launchings. TWX Colonel A.A. Newman to White House. Wish to advise fog remains. was clear for 13 minutes this a.m., please instruct. TWX White House to Newman PSP. Senate Space Committee under Senator Harry Washwater, Arizona, due Pacific Spaceport this Friday. TWX Colonel A.A. Newman to White House. Advise you, this office regards Washwater suggestion as not acceptable. TWX White House to Newman PSP. In confidence, advise ancillary political considerations make it desirable you reevaluate Washwater recommendation. TWX Colonel A.A. Newman to White House. In confidence, ask what possible political considerations can apply here. TWX White House to Newman PSP. In confidence, high unemployment rate, Native Americans in Washwater constituency. TWX Colonel B.M. Dewar, Acting Commander, Pacific Spaceport, to White House. Advise you, Colonel Newman's death established as suicide. TWX White House to Dewar PSP. Regrets officially from this office. Now suggest reevaluation of Washwater recommendation. How is the weather? TWX Colonel B.M. Dewar to White House. Re-evaluating weather. Still unspeakably bad. Was this place evaluated for weather before spaceport facilities built? TWX White House to Dewar PSP. Official position is change in Japanese current. Anxious for your decision on Washwater recommendation. TWX Colonel B.M. Dewar to White House. Respectfully defer decision to your office. TWX White House to Dewar PSP. Emergency forces on way from Arizona this a.m. per this office decision to follow Washwater recommendation. Please keep hourly information coming to this office. TWX Colonel B.M. Dewar to White House. Dancing began at 0420 PST. Every assistance being extended by this base. TWX Colonel B.M. Dewar to White House. Dancing still in progress. Chief Blue Sky declares repertoire of sun dances far from exhausted. TWX Colonel B.M. Dewar to White House. Countdown completed. Launching successful. Visibility unlimited. Weather control personnel asking for overtime. Please advise and accept my resignation. End of Untechnological Employment by E.M. Clinton, Jr.
The final episode tonight is a show from The Mysterious Traveler that originally aired on August 28th of 1951.
Broadcasting System presents The Mysterious Traveler, written, produced, and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Coben, and starring three of radio's foremost actors, Brett Morrison, Joyce Gordon, and Leon Jenny, in Fire in the Sky. Join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, that it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable, if you can, as we join two young people who find themselves in the strangest situation human beings ever encountered. It's the story I call Fire in the Sky. It's late evening, and a
convertible with the top down is driving along a lonely road in the Shenandoah Valley. The driver is young, in his 20s. So is the girl beside him. They're Mr. and Mrs. Nicholas Ramsey of New York City, married less than 24 hours and honeymooning. Rick Ramsey is driving slowly, for both he and Sally are watching the great golden disc which is rising in the sky above the hills to the west. Not the moon, but the new comet, which the whole world is talking about with excited interest and some apprehension.
Nick, it's so bright. It's grown much brighter since last night.
Yes, I know. Seems to be about half as big as the moon now. You can almost see it grow.
Looks as if it were coming right at us.
Well, that's just an illusion. It'll pass about 15 million miles away, the radio said.
15 million? Sounds like a lot. But I wish it were more.
No, they said it wouldn't do much damage, even if it hit us head on. Comets are mostly gas, you know.
Well, it certainly looks solid. It is beautiful, though, isn't it? Hmm. I'm glad we decided to drive tonight so we could watch it.
Let's turn on the news and see what the radio says about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll try Washington. Danny Dunn has been giving a blow-by-blow account of its approach.
Hello, everybody. This is your feature reporter, Danny Dunn, speaking from Washington. Well, the big news tonight is still Comet X, as it's been nicknamed. Tonight, it seems it's going to pass little old Earth a bit closer than was thought. Maybe inside 10 million miles. But it's nothing to worry about. Can't hurt us any. A comet is just gas, you know. Like some congressman here in Washington. Oh, speaking of Washington, the president and his cabinet quietly left town today with their families. We're told they're going to a special government observatory where they can all see Comet X through telescopes. Now that just shows you how interested everybody is. The rest of the world is standing outdoors tonight, keeping an eye on the sky. After all, this is a spectacle mankind sees only once in 1,000 years, and nobody wants to miss it. Well, folks, the government has asked me to pass along the following to you. Don't be alarmed if Comet X seems to be getting awfully close.
I guess there's nothing new.
It's just an optical illusion.
Nick, look up ahead. Somebody's signaling us with a flashlight.
Yeah, it looks like an old codger, one of the local natives, I guess.
Do you think we ought to stop? It's a lonely road.
Oh, he probably just wants a lift. Anyway, he's so old he couldn't hurt us any. Hello, you want a lift?
Oh, evening, folks. Mighty glad you come along. I need some help bad.
Help?
It's my partner. Rock slide fell on him, crushed his chest in. He's down in the mine. I need help to get him out.
You're a miner?
That's right, ma'am. Name's Jones. Jerry Jones. We got us a mine up this road about a quarter of a mile. Poor Sam hurt himself an hour ago. Been waiting ever since for somebody to come along.
Well, Sally, I guess it's up to us. We can't leave some poor fellow dying and not help.
But, Nick, are you sure?
I'm sure it's all right. Okay, hop in, Mr. Jones. We'll have your partner out just as quick as we can.
Here you are, folks. A little shack covers the mine, Chef.
Come along, Sally.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry we haven't any first aid equipment, Mr. Jones.
I've got some down below. This way, Mr. Ramsey. You have to go down on the lift.
Nick, look how bright it is. This comet seems to be growing bigger by the minute.
Here we are. Step inside, folks. I got the flashlight.
Huh. We've got a regular mine lift in here. Machinery and everything. What kind of mine is this?
It used to be a coal mine. Got abandoned. Me and Sam, we found a little vein of diamonds down in the coal.
Diamonds?
Now, wait a minute. There aren't any diamond mines in this country.
Sure there is. Got some down below. Prove it to you after we fix up, Sam. Please step on lift, Mr. Ramsey.
Nick, I think this is a trick.
So do I. A diamond mine. Listen, Jones. Coal and diamonds don't go together, even though they're both carbon. So we're not getting on that lift.
I'm afraid you have to, Mr. Ramsey. Believe me, I'll shoot if you try to get away.
Nick, a gun.
Now listen, put away that revolver. I don't know what kind of crazy scheme this is,
it's
but...
It's not crazy. I'm trying to save your life.
Save our lives?
You see that comet in the sky?
Yes.
They're calling it Comet X. They should be calling it Doomsday.
You are crazy.
That's enough talk. In 14 hours, this Earth and that comet are going to meet, and time is precious. Get on that lift, Mr. and Mrs. Ramsey, or I'll shoot. Believe me, no harm will come to you if you do just as I say.
I guess we'd better do it, Sally. There's no use in arguing with a madman who has a gun.
Oh, if you say so, Nick.
Now, that's better. Now, hold on tightly. Don't do anything foolish. If you don't know how to operate this lift, then we have a 1,000-foot drop below us.
Down for so long, though.
We're almost at the bottom, Mrs. Ramsey. Please don't be frightened. I'm doing this for your own good.
Hey, who are you? You're not a native. You lost your hillbilly accent long ago.
No, I'm not. It is just a crude disguise. My name is Jeremiah Jones, formerly Professor Jones. We've reached bottom. The surface of the earth is 1,000 feet above. Now, Mr. Ramsey, if you and your wife try to attack me, you might succeed. But you'd be very foolish. You'll need me to get you out of here again.
Yes, I suppose that's right.
Very well, please walk quietly ahead of me. These old mine shafts are quite level. I'll shine my flashlight ahead and you won't have any difficulty.
I suppose we have to humor you, but why are you doing this? What are you up to?
You won't believe me if I tell you, Mr. and Mrs. Ramsey, that you two are the most important people in the world tonight. So just walk ahead of me and we'll have the explanations later.
How much further is it? All these tunnels are winding and twisting. Nick, I'm completely lost.
Listen, Jones, if that's your name, come to your senses. Take us back to the surface and we'll forget this happened.
Careful, there's a door ahead of you.
Oh, yes.
Push it open and go in.
Well, shine your flashlight inside. We can't see a thing.
You'll find a light switch beside the door. Turn it on.
Nick, he's closed the door.
He's locking us in. Jones! Jones!
Turn on the light and just wait calmly. I'll be back. I have to go to the surface now to see if I can rescue anyone else.
Jones! Jones! Oh, he's gone.
Nick. Nick, I'm frightened.
No, it'll be all right, Sally. I'm sure it will. There was a light switch, didn't there?
Yes.
Let's see if we can find it. It should be here beside the door. Maybe it's higher. There, I've got it. Lord.
Nick, we're in a room. Completely furnished.
Yes.
Chairs, tables, electric lights. There's even a radio.
Through those archways, I can see a kitchen. Another room. But this place is like a furnished apartment.
1,000 feet underground, with walls of solid rock. And he's locked us in here. But why, Nick, why?
I don't know, Sally. I don't know. I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Nick, what time is it? How long have we been down here?
2 a.m. We've been locked in here nearly 4 hours.
Nick, it's crazy. He's a madman. He must be.
I wonder. If he's mad, there's certainly a method in his madness. Look around you. This furniture, a radio, a kitchen. There must be a generator someplace to supply these lights.
That's what I mean. Only a madman would fix up an old abandoned mine like this.
You know, I've just placed his name. Professor Jeremiah Jones.
Who is he?
He's an obscure astronomer who 10 years ago claimed to have discovered a comet no one else could see. And he dropped out of sight.
He seems to have an obsession about comets. He said Comet X should be called... Doomsday.
Yes, I know. And I can't help wondering. Let's turn on that radio again. I have a hunch we'll be getting some news soon. Real news.
All right. Nick, how can a radio work way down here underground?
You must have a wire running above to the surface.
It's just music.
Well, let's leave it on. There may be a bulletin. Mm.
Hello, everybody. This is your special reporter, Danny Dunn, back with a very important bulletin.
Nick,
I've just come from a meeting at the Smithsonian Institute, and I have some last-minute news about our mysterious visitor, Comet X.
He's leading up to something.
Now, folks, I don't want to alarm you. Panic won't help anybody. But it looks as if there may be some danger after all. It's only common sense to be prepared for it.
Nick.
It seems Comet X is not holding to the course predicted for it. Its orbit now intersects the Earth. In about 10 hours, the Earth will pass through the glowing heart of the comet.
Just as Professor Jones told us.
But I repeat, there is no cause for undue alarm. I have Mr. Andrew Weatherby, head of the Scientific Bureau, here at the microphone, to tell you in person what to expect. Mr. Weatherby.
Nick. Give me your hand. I'm frightened.
Yes, this is big if they've got Weatherby himself on the air.
Good evening, everyone. As you all know, a comet is composed largely of glowing gases. Now, just what effect these gases may have when the Earth passes through them, we do not know. But we anticipate they will be so tenuous, they will hardly be noticeable. However, accompanying the comet is a core of tiny particles of rock and iron. Now, these, entering our atmosphere, will cause a spectacular display of shooting stars and may do some damage.
You'll bet.
Accordingly, the government is asking everyone to take the following precaution. Within the next 8 hours, take shelter. Underground, if possible. Otherwise, in cellars or in air raid shelters. Take with you all the food and water you can manage. Take bedding, warm clothes. And be prepared to stay under shelter for at least 48 hours. Begin your preparations now. You will receive further instructions by radio. But above all, remain calm.
Well, folks, this is Danny Dunn again. I'll be standing by all night long to bring you the latest. Keep tuned in and don't worry. This will be a great story to tell your grandchildren. So long for now.
Nick, there's something they're not telling us. I'm sure of it. Do you suppose that the cup...
Professor Jones back. Why, Professor...
Nick, he has two little children with him. Oh, one of them is just a baby. A little girl. Here, give it to me. Yeah, it's all right. You mustn't cry. Everything's all right.
Thank you. If you, Mr. Ramsey, can take this little boy. Fortunately, he's still sleeping.
Just let me have him. I've got him. Now, you sit down. You're all in, and there's blood on your coat.
I'm afraid I've been shot.
Oh. I'll put the boy on the couch there. Yes, he's still sleeping soundly. Now, let me look at you. Let me get this coat off. I'm sorry, but it's got to come off. There. Uh-oh, you've lost a lot of blood.
Yes, I know it. Too much, I'm afraid.
You'll have to cut your shirt loose and fix the bandage. Sally, can you help me?
Oh, yes. Baby's gone back to sleep. I'll put her down on the couch, too.
I'm going to cut away the shirt. You pull it loose as I cut.
All right.
How did you get shot, Professor, and where did you get those children?
I went out to bring back more people to this shelter. There are no cars on the road. I went to a house a mile or so away. Family and some visitors were out in the lawn watching the comet.
That's fine, Sally. Now give me something to wipe away the blood.
Oh, here, my scarf.
I knew if I tried to persuade them, they'd think I was crazy. I saw the children, a boy and a girl, asleep in the back room. I stole them. The baby woke up and cried. Somebody shot at me. I got away in the darkness.
Catch him, Nick.
I've got him. Help me ease him into the chair.
He
passed out from loss of blood. And here we are, stuck down in an old mine 1,000 feet underground with two children that he's taken from their family.
Mr. Ramsey.
Here I am. So you're awake. How are you feeling?
Very weak, I'm afraid. How are the children?
Oh, they're fine. Luckily, they're too young to be scared. Sally's out in the kitchen feeding them. Now, look here, Professor. It's one thing to lure us down here. It's another thing to steal two babies and
please,
bring them in.
Please, Mr. Ramsey. Face the facts. Haven't I convinced you the entire world is in grave danger?
Danger? From what? A few chunks of stone that may be part of a comet? The radio last night admitted some damage might be done.
Some damage? What do the broadcasts say now?
I don't know. We haven't listened. After we got you into bed last night to take care of the children, Sally and I just fell asleep. Since we woke up, we've been so busy we haven't had a chance to listen.
You turn on the radio now. Let's listen.
Of course. While you were gone, Andrew Weatherby urged everyone to take shelter for a few days.
Hello, everybody. This is Dan Dunn. Sleepy, but still on the job. Well, I guess you won't find anything else on the radio this morning except the comet. It's so bright you can see it blazing away in the morning sky like a baby sun. It's about 4 hours before its path intersects ours.
4 hours?
I repeat again the official advice. Take shelter. Stay undercover for the next few days, but don't panic. Panic is more dangerous than the comet, believe me. I have to admit that a lot of people have unfortunately lost their heads the last few hours. Roads leading out of every city are clogged with refugees trying to get away. A good many people have been killed in the crush of crowds fleeing the city. We have reports of hundreds of auto accidents, some looting. Fires are burning unchecked in a number of places. Firemen are fleeing with the others. Washington this morning is a deserted city. So many people here have autos, you know, and they were able to get away. All the air raid shelters are full. People in them are being very calm about it. Our news from other places is a bit scanty. Some lines are down. I'll keep bringing you all the bulletins as they come in. Right now, I've got to get a little rest, so this is Dan Dunn, signing off temporarily, folks.
Well, are you convinced now, Mr. Ramsey?
Well, people are losing their heads because they're scared. But that still doesn't say the comet is actually dangerous to the Earth.
Yes, I know. It wouldn't be if it was just an ordinary comet. But it isn't.
Well, what is it then?
Mr. Ramsey, the fiery head of Comet X is radioactive.
Radioactive?
It will envelop the world in a searing bath of atomic fire. In a dozen hours, civilization will have come to an end.
How's the professor, Nick?
Unconscious. His fever is high and he's in a delirium. His pulse is very weak.
Only we could do something for him.
I've done what I could from the medicine chest. In his mind now, he's reliving the time 10 years ago when he first discovered Comet X and predicted that it was radioactive.
He predicted that?
Yes. Yes, we had quite a talk while you were busy with the two kids. He was an obscure professor of astronomy in a little college. He found a speck of light wandering around in the sky, identified it as a comet, analyzed it as being radioactive, and predicted that on its next visit, it would strike the Earth.
And nobody believed him?
Well, the comet had vanished by then. Everybody thought he'd imagined it. And when he claimed it was radioactive and would destroy civilization, that was too much. He was fired, he had a breakdown, and was in an institution for years.
Oh, yes, now I remember. I read something about it years ago. But the war was on it.
And people had other things to think about. Everybody forgot Professor Jones and the comet. You see, the atomic bomb hadn't been developed then, so the idea of an atomic comet was considered plain crazy.
Now it's come true. Oh, Nick.
Yeah. Well, let's turn the radio on again, see if Danny Dunn is still broadcasting.
All right. What time is it?
Well, my watch says 8. Must be 8 at night. No way to be sure way down here underground.
Well, everybody, I don't guess there's much more I can say. We're broadcasting from the sub-basement of the building. About 6 of us locked in here. I don't know how much longer we can hold out. We haven't had any communication from outside Washington for the last hour. All wires are dead. Can't pick up any other radio broadcast. Washington's a dead city now. A weird sight. We have a television camera hooked up on the roof. Shows all of the big government buildings outlined by a ghostly greenish light. Luminous gas surrounding the head of Comet X. We're right in the middle of the comet now. Be about 6 hours before it starts to withdraw. Anybody who can hear me, stay underground as long as you Radioactivity will be deadly for a long time yet. The estimates vary. One guess was that our Earth will be poisoned for 20 years to come. In that case, our power seems to be failing. I guess we'll have to sign off now. So long, everybody.
She's gonna be in.
Nick. Nick, think of the whole world dead.
Now, wait a minute, darling. There's bound to be millions of people in safe places like we are. Caves, tunnels, old mines.
Yes, but did you hear what he said? The Earth may be poisoned by radioactivity for years.
Yes, Professor?
I'd like some water.
Of course.
I'll bring it.
How are you feeling?
My head is clear, but I'm very weak. How long was I unconscious?
Almost 2 days.
2 days? And the comet
has come and gone.
And the world?
The radio's dead. We can't pick up anything.
The last report from Washington said it was a dead city.
If only they listened to me 10 years ago.
Now, you mustn't upset yourself, Professor. You did everything one man could.
Yes. When I was released from that institution last year, I set about fixing up this refuge. I bought the old mine. All by myself, I brought down furnishings, machinery, food. When I tried to get a few people to join me here, he thought I was insane again.
We understand, Professor.
In the end, I had to resort to desperate trickery, which got you here.
And we're very grateful for it, sir.
And I stole 2 children, the boy and the girl. Out of the whole world, you 4 are all I see.
But there must be other people alive somewhere.
Yes, yes, of course, now. By the time the surface of the Earth is livable again.
Will it really be 20 years?
Yes, Mrs. Ramsey. Between 15 and 20 years before the human race can once again live on the Earth's surface.
But in even 15 years, the people who are still alive now...
Exactly. Some will live. Human race is very tough. But they may be terribly changed. To reestablish civilization, we can only be sure of you 4.
Oh, no.
Dear, you mustn't be dismayed. I've planned carefully. There's everything you'll need for 20 years down in this cavern. Medicine, food, clothing, books, gasoline. You must not go above ground until it is absolutely safe. Then you will find the world changed. Animal life, plant life, it may have been altered greatly by the radioactivity, but it will be safe again.
Professor, you're too weak to talk.
No, I must talk now. I haven't much more time.
Of course you have. You're going to get well, Professor. We need you.
I wish I could, but I won't. And now let's build for a better world. We seem to have gotten off the track somehow. Maybe nature simply decided to be done with us when she sent that comet. I don't know. But this is a chance to start over again and do better.
Professor Jones.
Nick, he's not...
I'm afraid he is. He's dead, darling.
We're left. You and me. Down here, 1,000 feet underground. We have to live here. 20 years or more. Oh, no, Nick, no.
Then you can't give way, Sally. We've got too much to do. Listen.
Baby. Gotta go to him.
That's what I mean. We have to take good care of those kids.
Yes, Courtney. Of course we do.
And we'll have to give them names. We could call them Adam and Eve, but let's not. Suppose we just call them Johnny and Susie.
Yes, Nick. All right, Susie. I'm coming. I'm coming.
Check up on something. Would you just step outside and have a look at the sky? There's a speck of light up there, just to the right of the North Star. It wasn't there last night, and I was just wondering if you... Oh, but it couldn't be a comet, of course not. And even if it is, I'm sure we're in no danger. Of course, if you'd like to know the location of a nice, deep cave... Oh, you have to get off here. I'm sorry. But I'm sure we'll meet again. I take this same train every week at this same time.
Just heard The Mysterious Traveler with Maurice Tarplin in the title role. Others in our cast were Brett Morrison, Joyce Gordon, and Leon Janney. Original music played by Fred Mendelson. All characters in our story were fictional, and any resemblance to actual persons in name or otherwise was purely coincidental. Bill Tarkin speaking. This program has come to you from New York. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
And this is Gary Clinton. Now, I'm not a fictional character, although I sometimes do wonder. And I guess you got your rights to wonder, too. Anyway, this is the end of Night Transmissions, and I'm going to play us out with Billy Mays and his orchestra playing Ira Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue, because I like it so much.